Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Middle East Today. Coming to you from Beirut, I'm Mariam Saleh. Syrian ambassador to the United Nations, Bashar Jaafari, has said Damascus is committed to a proposed plan for settling the Syrian unrest. He also denounced U.S.-led attempts to funnel funds and weapons to armed gangs in the Arab nation. Now, this comes after a gathering of some 70 countries, including Qatar and the United States, which took place in Istanbul, which pledged $100 million to provide salaries and communications equipment for Syrian rebels fighting against the Syrian government. Now, analysts fear that the Istanbul conference only throws sand in the gears and hinders any chance of a political solution. Let's try to get some more on this issue. I am joined by Mr. Salah Taqiyyedin, political analyst, also joined by Dr. Omar Nashabi. He's editor in Al Akhbar Daily here in Beirut. I'm also joined by Mr. Talib Ibrahim. He's joining us via satellite from Damascus. I want to welcome you all to the show. Let me begin with you, Dr. Nashabi. Do you think that this conference, the Istanbul conference, shares the same the common fate, if we may say, as the Tunis conference?
I think it has a lot of points in common. However, the Tunis conference was the first conference that was a clear international declaration of interference in internal Syrian affairs in a way that violates basic basic diplomatic rules and basic international law. The interesting thing about this conference is that the tone, I felt, of some speeches was higher. And that was explained by some analysts as because on the ground, the people they support in Syria have been regressing. I mean, their action is no longer as destructive as it was at the earlier stages. I'm not talking about the very, very early stages. The very, very early stages there was, and there still is, there still are some people in Syria who have a true will for democratic reform and some changes that are very basic and that no one can disagree with. In fact, President Assad himself talked about these demands, and he actually recognized that there is a need for democratic reforms, and these democratic reforms are on the way. They're a bit slow, it's true. The people have the right to protest that the reforms are slow. However, these reforms are there. I don't think that there's anyone in their full mind would actually consider that it's time to destroy everything in Syria just because we have some demands that have not been met. Let's give this a chance. The whole direction is, and the whole direction that is that opposes these conferences, the so-called friends of Syria, that do not show any sign of true, honest friendship. Because true, honest friendship is to care about preserving the Syrian institutions. Let me give an example, just briefly.
Yes.
Let me give an example of services in Syria. We are living here in Lebanon. We suffered from 17-year war that destroyed most of our institutions. Most of the services are really not available to the citizens. In Syria, you have basic medical services available to citizens at low price. You have educational services provided. You have electricity. You have better internet connection and communication, and telephone lines and mobile phones are better and cheaper than Lebanon. You have basic services that are there, and I think that if one really is a friend of Syria, one should preserve these institutions. How do you preserve them? By having a ceasefire, by stopping the smuggling of weapons into Syria, and by calling for a dialogue. And there are elections coming up. I don't see who in their right mind would actually stir up destruction of Syria, as has been done in these conferences.
Yes, let me ask Mr. Salah Taqiyyedin, you think that they wanted to, the conference in Istanbul wanted to make another side to the United Nations, perhaps, although these countries have always voiced the need to fulfill all United Nations resolutions and so on. You think that they're trying to hinder the initiative of Mr. Kofi Annan and just have their own initiative?
No, on the contrary, I think it would go with the mission of the former Secretary General of the United Nations. But I want to go back to what Dr. Nashabi just said. It's true, there are institutions, there are the basic demands that people are looking for, they are provided by the Syrian government, by the establishment itself. But what about freedom?
You're
those,
right.
Those people are calling for a voice in their future.
You're right.
They're not being given that freedom. Now, regardless of that, to go back to the Istanbul conference, you cannot say 70 countries from around the world that they are there, and they might be not truly the friends of the Syrian government, but they are the friends of Syria as people. And I think just the fact that they agreed on recognizing the Syrian National Council as a representative, I think it's a push for the opposition to unite, for them to have a representative with whom they can go into dialogue, and to try to finish with that say about who's gonna replace what is after. Now I think the Istanbul conference gave a hint for me, as far as I can see it, is not if the regime will collapse, it's when. It's about the timing, that's all.
You mean those countries are...
I think it's an illusion, truly. I mean, we'll yes. discuss this further, but I yes. think it's an illusion because everything, all the givens, if you observe what's going on in Syria, if you listen to the Syrians, if you actually observe the fact since it started in January until today, there is no scientific indication that this is a matter that is even close to a reality.
Yeah, Dr. Nashabi, the question that I may ask is that, do you think if tomorrow there would be a ceasefire as called by the peace plan proposed by Mr. Annan, do you think democracy would be installed in Syria? Would President Assad be able to rule after what happened over the years?
Just a quick question before I go to Mr. Talib Ibrahim.
Yes.
Many analysts believe that this actually encourages civil war, the fact that the Istanbul Conference is what is stopping in the way of any political solution and therefore is encouraging civil war because they have pledged money to the rebels fighting inside
probably,
Syria.
Probably that point of view is very right. I mean, encouraging to arm the opposition is not a wise idea as far as I can see it. But what happened in Libya, what happened in Tunis, what happened in Egypt, I mean, there was clearly an international decision to get rid of the regime. It wasn't the mm-hmm. act of the inside alone. I mean, people were calling for freedom, for change, but if there wasn't an international resolution to act on that point, it wouldn't have happened.
Yes, well, it seems the Syrian government is still intact. Let me ask Mr. Talib Ibrahim in Damascus, how far is the Syrian government willing to cooperate with Mr. Kofi Annan and make this political solution work? Do you think that we will see no armed presence in all of the Syrian cities and therefore will stop any, for example, excuse for a civil war to continue?
First of all, yes, Syrian government will cooperate as far as possible as Kofi Annan mission, and we are very, very much interested to make this mission successful indeed, because this is our interest to stop the fighting inside Syria. Syrian army, the real enemies of Syria and the Syrian army are not those armed groups, but the enemy is Israel, very simply. But what I will say it here, would you please allow to me to have some comments about what was said from Beirut in Syria? Nobody is convinced that United States and Britain and France and Israel are friends to Syrian population. They are the enemies of Syrian population, the enemies of Arab and Islamic world. So here we are very much convinced that there is a conspiracy against Syrian army and Syrian population. My colleague was talking about freedom and democracy in Syria and et cetera. And I will inform him something very, very important. And I very clear, we lost our freedom in this last month because of the fighting inside Syria. 1 month ago, there were no soldiers in the streets, no tanks in the streets. Who brought those people? It is not to curb peaceful demonstration. This is a very, very big lie. We have armed groups who made massacres against civilians. There were sectarian violence. It is not a revolution. It is only an act to devastate the Syrian state with all of its symbols, the army, the president, and the flag, and the only side which is very, very much has benefits of what's happening in Syria is Israel, very simply. It is not Syrian population, and it is not Arab and not Islamic League. So up to now, we didn't lost our minds. Of course, we will cooperate with Kofi Annan. But the question here, if we, and we will withdraw our troops from inside cities and et cetera, and we will stop all fighting. But what is the guarantee? Who can give us any guarantee that this arms group, those criminals, those extremists, and those terrorists will stop fighting and killing our people? The army were pushed to the cities to protect civilians, not to kill civilians. This is the real truth. And of course, we are very, very, very much convinced of Kofi Annan's plan, and we will help him as far as possible. But the other side, who will have the control on them? Here is the question.
Mr. Ibrahim, my earlier guest, Mr. Taqiyuddin, said that even if we do see a political solution, we will not see democracy anytime soon inside Syria. How do you respond to that?
Of course, democracy, it is not being updated as a program in a computer. Democracy is a series, and it is in need to a very long time, not years, of course. But democracy means that the people will come and will choose their representing people in by voting. After 1 month, we have a parliamentary election. Why some people will not participate? And here the question, why some people, they don't want any dialogue with the government. Democracy means dialogue. Democracy means to avoid fighting, not to use weapons. In this way, I understand democracy. Let us come to dialogue as Syrians without our heads under the ceiling of the Syrian country to try to put the most suitable resolutions for our problems, because the resolution is very simply Syrian. No force in this world can push us to apply a kind of democracy in Syria. And we have seen how forcing people to make democracy in Iraq, in Libya, in et cetera, it was a catastrophe. So we want our own democracy, which is done and made by our own people.
Yes, we're joined on the phone by Mr. Raghib Tarani. He's a Turkish journalist. He's joining us on the phone from Istanbul. Mr. Tarani, several analysts, including Turkish analysts, have said that Turkish Prime Minister's his endeavor towards Syria is somewhat suicidal. Would you agree with this, the fact that Turkey's stance towards Syria has failed so far, and the previous fact that they said that this regime will fall, that the Syrian government will not last another 2 weeks and so on, this failed in the past? Do you agree with this hypothesis?
The one-day meeting of the so-called Friends of Syrian People meeting was a complete fiasco of looking from the point of view of Turkish diplomacy. It was a fiasco because, first of all, the Kofi Annan was not there, Iran was not there, and that was a meeting just, a great contradiction between the revendication of Ankara and the revendication of what we can call international community. It is true that the Turkish Prime Minister, Mr. Recep Tayyip Erdogan, declared, and it was published in the Turkish press, that if Hafez Assad is there, we are not there, which means, really very something very bizarre. He also said that if United Nations will not act, they will act, Turkey will act. This is also something very new, because I think that one of the most important criteria of international law is the United Nations, mainly the Security Council. So Turkey is in a difficult position. Ankara is in a difficult position now. Of course, looking from the diplomatical point of view, there is also the Kurdish problem, which is a great problem for Ankara. So Ankara is having a completely different voice when we compare Ankara's position with the position of the other capital of the area.
All right, Mr. Raghib Turanawa, thank you very much for joining us. Dr. Nashabi, what do you think went on in Mr. Erdogan's visit to Tehran, to Iran? What do you think Iran's message was to him? Do you think that, as I asked earlier, was it suicidal?
Well, the answer is very clear. It's by the fact that Iran does not participate in the conference. I think that it was an attempt by the Turks and by the Turkish diplomacy to pressure on Iran to participate in the conference, and they gave, I think, there were some leaks that that the Turkish diplomacy promised that they would tone down in order to allow the Iranians to step in. Well, the Iran has a fundamental position, and it is a position related to its interests and to its regional politics. Now, this is a very important matter, and it's also linked in a it's part of the arrangement, if I may say, between the between Iran and the Russian Federation and the People's Republic of China. I think this is a matter that has been that they went over, and I think there were some time issues that were discussed and some actual facts on the ground that were analyzed closely by the Iranians and by the Russians and the Chinese, and based on that they built a kind of a strategy to deal with this issue on a diplomatic, on an international diplomatic level. Mm-hmm. The fact that this has been going on for now more than a year and a couple of months, and this trouble has been going on, and the behavior of the regime and the fact that the regime was able to maintain its control, especially after the Bab Amro fell into the hands of the Syrian army, showed a very important advantage to Iranian, Russian, and Chinese policy in this region, and also it reflected on international diplomacy.
Yes, do you think
the fact also, that's one element. There are several elements. I will mention only some mm-hmm. of the most important elements. The fact that the Syrian army is united, as the guest from Damascus just mentioned. There are no, there are only individual deserters. There is no regiment or large group or large section from the Syrian army that deserted. There are individuals, few individuals here and there. That is a question that recurs in all trouble of that sort. The fact that there is no defection on the diplomatic level, because you mentioned Libya and Tunis and Egypt, there is no defection on the diplomatic level. However, there are like hundreds of Syrian embassies all over the place, and they could defect. Now, there are no defections. There are no defections in the Ba'ath Party. There are no serious defection within the Syrian government. The control over the land, over the resources, over the well, there are some terrorist attacks on some pipelines inside Syria, but it stops there. There are no control of border checkpoints or anything of that sort. Syria, under the leadership of President Assad, is in full control.
But and there's still a security problem. I mean,
there are security problems. There have been security problems even before that. One should remember that even 1 year before this trouble started in Syria, there was an explosion inside Damascus. There was an issue with the Sheikh al-Absi,
yes.
There was leaks that he was imprisoned there and that his people put a bomb there. There were incidents. There was the assassination of Ahmad Mughni, the leader of the resistance inside Syria. There are some security measures that must be improved within the Syrian territory. There are some people who are infiltrating the Syrian territory to do acts that destroy the security and stability of the country. That is an issue that will continue, unfortunately. However, I think President Assad and the regime and the government is in full control. On the issue of freedom, I agree.
If you can go quickly,
if I may, because I was asked by my friend about the issue of freedom. I just want to say that, yes, the issue of freedom is not related to Syria. I think it's related to the whole region. Let's look at it from this perspective, in a realistic perspective. Yes, in Lebanon we have a special case. We have went through and we suffered.
Maybe
we have 150,000.
To compare them to us.
Yes, but we have 150,000 people who were killed in Lebanon.
I hope that would not be the price for Syria.
I hope so. I think we all hope so. And I think this conference in Istanbul and the coming conference perhaps in Paris is only increasing the possibilities of destruction, and it is an attempt to push these people to create destruction inside Syria. I just want to say very fast, please. The issue of freedom is related to the whole region. I agree with you. There is the freedom deficit in the region, especially in Saudi Arabia and in Qatar, and in Emirates and in Oman and in the other Gulf countries is really putting the whole scale of freedom lower.
Yes, thank
I think
you.
Syria is not really, if one wants look and pick the priority for the battle for freedom, one starts with Saudi Arabia.
All right, let's get this phone call from Mr. Just 1 minute. I'll get back to you guys. Just 1 minute. We're joined on the phone by Mr. Kamal Nawash. He's a Republican Party activist joining us on the phone from Washington. Mr. Nawash, we heard from Mr. Mike Rogers. He's chairman of the House Intelligence Committee in the United States. And he said in a television interview that there are no signs that the Assad government is losing its grip on power. Do you think that there are contradictions within the United States Department? How do you respond to this?
Well, look, I mean, much of what your guest just said is probably true. It's not completely true. It's probably true. I think at this point, I mean, obviously Syria has enemies outside of the country who, if they had an opportunity, they would like to take advantage of this and probably maybe even attack Syria. So I would say at this point that the Syrian regime or the Assad regime needs to act very wisely. They have to act very wisely. I mean, they actually have a good opportunity with Annan, with Kofi Annan's proposal, that they should try to do as much as possible to go along with it, because you don't want a situation with Kofi Annan at some point going back to the Security Council and saying Syria is just not cooperating with us. And if that continues, you never know if China and Russia will continue to stay with supportive of Russia. So, I mean, Syria. So I'm just saying, I think the Syrian regime needs to be very, very wise. I think it was smart. There were some news reports today that they have pulled some of their heavy weapons from some cities. They should probably pull them out of all the cities. And if the rebels continue to fight, then they can show, they can show the world to say, look, here we are, we stopped fighting, we pulled the heavy weapons out, and these people are continuing to fight the government, then Syria would be in a better position. But if they continue doing what they're doing right now and continue shelling cities like Homs, they might end up in trouble where they lose all their friends, and Syria risks being bombed by NATO or other countries, and I don't think anyone wants that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kamal Nawash from Washington. Let me ask you, Mr. Taqiyuddin, do you think that the Arab states like Saudi Arabia and Qatar found themselves in the Istanbul conference more than they did in the Baghdad conference, for instance? That this was more important for them, that the main focus for them now is fighting the Syrian government.
So fighting the Syrian government, that's a big game, right? Let me get back to that later, but as far as Dr. Nashabi is saying, we are not discussing who's in control in Syria. There's no doubt the regime is still in full control, right? This is not the issue. When you are in power for more than 40 years, when you train your security forces in a way to handle the situation strictly, and I don't have to explain it, you know it better than I do. We're not discussing who is in control, but the issue is, what about the people? What about the region? I mean, the regime now finds himself in alliance with only regionally Iran and Iraq, and internationally with China and USSR, the former USSR,
Russia.
Russia. What about the rest of the world?
But you have countries like Brazil and China and India and so on.
The BRICS states, they're still on. Yeah, but they are not
balanced.
Tough. They are not tough against the regime or with the regime, as are the other countries. All right.
It's not about the regime. It's about the Syrian people. Let me tell you.
All right. I'm talking about the Syrian people. Yes. So that's what I'm asking.
Yes.
You. What about them?
I will answer you. I will answer you in less than 30 seconds. I will refer to the Doha Institute, who made a research about this, and they made a survey, and they realized that the Doha Institute realized that 55% of the Syrian people do not want the overthrow of the regime.
What about the 45%?
They should come to the dialogue, not take guns and shoot at government institutions.
As
but
well.
If I start by saying that the regime won't do it then I'm closing all the prospects for dialogue.
He goes all the way to political solution.
Let's give us a chance.
Unfortunately,
we are giving it a chance, of course.
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to stop. We're going to have to stop right here. Our time has run out. Thank you very much, Mr. Salah al-Din, Dr. Omar Nashabi, and thank you very much. We're also joined by Mr. Talib Ibrahim in Damascus, Mr. Raghb Turan from Istanbul, and Mr. Kamal Nawash in Washington. Our email is metoday@presstv.com. We're waiting for your feedback. Thanks for joining us. Goodbye.